Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration. Dave, many may be loosely familiar with the maritime transportation system, so could you perhaps describe it for us? What are the critical elements and nodes that make up this global system, and what are some of the key challenges facing this system in the 21st century?
Well, the maritime industry is so unique. It's been around for hundreds of years, probably thousands, but what's so unique about it is that with the storied past that it's had, it's played such an important role in the development of our nation. But what many people don't realize is that it continues to play such a key role today. If you look at over 95% of everything imported into this country arrives by ship, it kind of tells you that it's still a key part of our economy, our national defense, to keeping us safe at home. It is, it's critical. If you talk to, and I work very closely with a number of our Department of Defense, our military commanders, and they talk about what is needed for their supply chains. How do you get supplies, bullets, ammunition to the troops on the front lines? It's got to come by maritime. If you're going to keep, sustain a war effort, or maybe if it's bringing relief supplies for humanitarian causes after an earthquake, say like the one we had in Haiti last year. And we actually watched as this happened, but as the number of flights that could come in bringing relief supplies was so limited on the small airport serving Port-au-Prince, you really had to get the port open to bring in ships to carry the real significant number of supplies needed. I think that was a very, let's say, colorful experience where it showed exactly how important maritime was. I think when we did the math, we figured out that a single ship could bring as many as about 400 times the number of supplies that a single C-17 flight could deliver into Haiti. And when you have a million people in need, that was that's something that you've got to take into account. Just the simple math and logistics is what really drives this industry in terms of what keeps it going, why it's still important today. I can tell you, as a promotional agency, our biggest challenge is getting people to understand how important it still is today. It keeps our country's economy flowing. Again, the military aspect, the humanitarian aspect, there are jobs in this industry, whether it's people serving on a ship or in the front office or in a shipbuilding facility, a shipyard, or they're repairing vessels, or they're training new ship's officers. It's a very exciting industry, very dynamic, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. That's actually one of our biggest challenges.
Early in this decade, the Maritime Administration leadership recognized the need to address landside congestion through expanded use of water-borne transportation alternatives. To that end, would you elaborate on America's Marine Highways Initiative, highlighting the core components of this initiative and its intended benefit?
Absolutely. Well, let me just start by saying that I think that while that may be true, this administration has taken a slightly different focus for the program. In fact, the singular focus on highway congestion has somewhat evolved now that the Obama administration is really looking at things from a twofold perspective. Number one, the livability of a community or transportation system. I don't think that our efforts are entirely targeted toward highways. How do we relieve congestion on the highways? But rather a broader approach to say, well, if you're living in a commuter, how do we actually make it more livable for you? You know, why don't we, for instance, take a look at siting, housing opportunities closer to where people work so that you don't have a long commute, or give you other options to get to work, like taking transit or biking or walking. So it's a much more comprehensive approach to not just focusing on congestion, but frankly, how people live. The second element that we've really focused on is sustainability. If we are moving things, and things must move in order to keep our economy going, freight, passengers, wherever people or goods are moving to, how can we make this entire system more sustainable? Mm-hmm. And I think the environmental sustainability question is one that will continue to pose a challenge. I think that the maritime industry, for one, is one where there's great promise to move more goods on the water. And that's where we see the America's Marine Highway Program really fitting in into this overall strategy. Yes, it can help relieve highway congestion, but it does so many more things, too, that we need to focus on. It can create jobs, mm-hmm. not just for people working on the ships, the mariners themselves, but also in shipyards. If we're building new ships to go out there and offer service to carry goods along the waterways instead of on the congested highways, it can also help with, like I mentioned, livability. Safety is certainly an issue. We've seen the potential for hazardous material spills and incidents and what that can do to the highway. And those kinds of disruptions, I think, pose a real risk to our economy. And there are certainly, if we really put our heads together and think about how can we move certainly dangerous chemicals, but just even regular goods as well, more efficiently on the water without having to take those kinds of risks.
Well, actually, I'd like to explore a point that you raised in your earlier anecdote around Haiti and the emergency response. Your administration plays an integral role in the country's defense as a mission support apparatus and also in emergency response preparedness. What role does the Maritime Security Program play in this area? And could you tell us a little bit more about this program?
Sure. Well, the Maritime Security Program is a way to make sure that there are commercial merchant ships available to the United States government whenever we need them. And that way that we don't have to have government ships that are funded by the taxpayer where they're not needed all the time. We may be using these ships once a decade, but we need to have that readiness and that capability. So this program effectively accomplishes that by making sure that these ships will be available by paying the private operators a small retainer fee to make sure that they will operate under the United States flag. They will maintain United States citizen mariner jobs for the use of the military when called upon. Believe me, it's a much cheaper way to do it than growing the Navy or growing even a commercial government merchant service. I guess in a sense, it's one of the original public-private partnerships, the United States Merchant Marine. And the Maritime Security Program is one of the key ways in which we can make sure that that sea lift capability is there when the nation needs it.
Now, are you doing anything to enhance its effectiveness currently?
Absolutely. We are taking a close look at the program to understand what we need to do going forward. We're working with our partners in the industry, our partners in the military, and certainly on Capitol Hill as the Congress looks at extending the program for another 10 years or so. These types of incentives are needed to make sure that there will be a U.S. Merchant Marine going forward. It is very tough to compete in the world market given the costs that American flag operators face. And so anything we can do to provide that incentive and in exchange get that guarantee that they'll be ready when we need them is critically important.
Well, I'd like to talk about how you do that in your agency. And one of the ways you do that is the Title 11, the Maritime Guaranteed Loan Program. Could you tell us a little bit more about the purpose and intent of this program? And what are some of the challenges you're facing with this program in an era of fiscal constraints?
Well, that's a good question. This is a program that goes back quite a ways. There used to be construction subsidies. There used to be loans. It's evolved into a loan guarantee, which really leverages the federal dollar because you're not paying out the full amount of every loan every time, but only a credit risk premium so that a small amount of money can finance a larger number of shipbuilding projects. In previous administrations, we've seen this program go through some interesting evolutions. I think the Inspector General had done a thorough job of pointing out some of the risks in the program and finding ways to help strengthen the analysis of the review and the application process before these loan guarantees are granted. There were a large number of high-profile defaults in the program before I got here. So I inherited quite a fleet, I guess, as we paid off, the agency had paid off some of these loans and taken possession of the ships that were built. So we've got the Title 11 fleet, and we're continuing to do the best we can to sell off the assets, pay back the federal government accounts, and make sure that, you know, we're putting these ships back into service and creating jobs and not just having them sit around in a federal fleet somewhere. The challenge going forward is trying to find the right balance between strong the review of a new application and making sure that it's continuing to be a tool that's useful to the commercial shipbuilders and their customers. Because if it's not useful and it's not working, nobody's going to use it. I've heard complaints about the timing it takes for a review. You know, what's shocking to me is most people don't understand that a lot of the cause for the delay is that an applicant will come in, say they want help, they want a loan guarantee, but then when we ask them for more information, that there's typically long periods of delay, and then when it gets toward the two-year deadline, things start moving again, and then there's a lot of pressure to get things done. One of the changes we're making is to say, look, we're not going to waste our time with people who just want to get in and let the clock start ticking. But if they're not actually working on their application, we're not just sticking it on the bottom of the stack. We'll kick it out and say, you know, you need to either pay attention, keep this moving, or you're just not ready.
Well, actually, I was wondering, what does your agency do in terms of support and assistance for small shipyards?
We have a wonderful program. It's a grant program where we provide grants to small shipyards. It's sometimes seen as a misnomer because some of these shipyards may be, the facility itself may be small, mm-hmm. but the owner may be a large multinational corporation. So you see a name on it of a big defense contractor, and you say, why are you giving them a grant? They're not small by any means. No, but the facility is. And the work they do at that facility, the capabilities that go on at these facilities are critical because they're the ones who are providing mostly the repair services for U.S. Flagships, and we need to make sure that we keep that critical capacity there as well.
That's great. And you had mentioned earlier as one of your core challenges and one of your core priorities is addressing and heightening the profile, if you will, and prestige of the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy out on Long Island. I'd like to know more about the mission of this academy and what are some of the issues it's facing and how are you addressing some of these issues?
The academy has long gone by the United States Merchant Marine Academy. At King's Point, and some people refer to it as just King's Point in the industry. There's a number of maritime academies, but there's only one that's our national maritime academy. And the key role and mission is to graduate future maritime leaders for the industry. Its focus is working to develop not just mariner skills, not just engineering skills, the academic, but they want to, like the other academies, are focusing on developing the complete person. A strong focus, again, not just on academics, not just on ship handling, but on leadership. And we've seen over time that, you know, these are folks, many of them go on to be leaders in the industry. They work their way up, you know, after sailing for some time and taking that experience and really leveraging it and just going on to do great things. I'll point out that astronaut Mark Kelly was a Merchant Marine Academy graduate. Maybe one example of many that folks who've just gone on to do great things and not always recognized for it. That's been one of the big challenges. And I know when Secretary LaHood, and he obviously started before I did, but when he first went to King's Point, he was so impressed with the people and the midshipmen and the potential that he said, you know, this has really got to be the kind of a jewel of an academy that, you know, the other schools are. You hear about the Navy Academy, Naval Academy, West Point, and the Air Force Academy. We really need the kind of attention and support that these other academies get. And they have it in this administration, that's for sure. We've seen unprecedented levels of interest, budgeting, support just for everything the Academy does. If you look at the numbers, there's so many more federal dollars spent on the other academies than on King's Point. And it's just amazing because you get, the product you get out of it is just so fantastic that there really does need to be a better model of investment for the school.
You mentioned one of the challenges. What are some of the other challenges that it's facing in terms of outside the business operation areas?
Probably the three key areas were internal and financial controls, as I mentioned. Second is the campus and facilities. Okay. It was built in the 1940s, and many of the old buildings are still there, and they have not been updated. It's led to, I think as with any older facility, you deal with, higher maintenance costs, energy costs. You don't have the efficiencies of the modern-day construction. We also, it was the first academy to admit women. But the problem is there weren't changes made to the campus to be able to accommodate them properly. So, nobody redesigned, a facility to have both a men's room and a ladies' room, a restroom, and or a ladies' locker room. And so some of these things really need to be done more effectively. I've been to the campus and seen things like converted, storage closets that are now, a female locker room or restroom facilities. And that's just not what we want for the school, and it's certainly just not appropriate.
Well, I'd like to continue on this line and talk about the State Maritime Academy program. How does it complement the mission of the Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point? And what are some of the ways it significantly increases the recruitment of future maritime?
The State Maritime Academies are fantastic. I've been to a number of them and seen just the strong programs they have in maritime. I will say that while the the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy focuses on licensed officers, not every state academy has such a singular focus. Many of them actually have the flexibility to adapt to trends in the U.S. industry a little better and say, for instance, if there is a strong need for graduates with education experience that will help out in, say, shipyard finance or a related maritime industry that's not necessarily working as a ship's officer, these other schools can help fill that need. And so they really specialize in a number of areas and a number of ways. They all have proud traditions as well, and fantastic graduates and alumni, very supportive. In fact, we hire at the Maritime Administration, I know we have people from every single maritime academy in the country, whether state or the U.S. Marine Academy.
How is the Maritime Administration working to enhance the competitiveness of the United States? We will ask David Matsuda, Administrator of the U.S. Maritime Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.